welcome to Higher Ed, KUT's podcast focusing on issues of higher education, lifelong learning, and exercising the brain. I'm Jennifer Staton with KUT 90.5, Austin's NPR station. Pleased, as always, to begin another discussion with Dr. Ed Berger, president of Southwestern University in Georgetown. Hello, Ed.
Hello, Jennifer, and welcome back to our beautiful soundstage here on the campus of Southwestern University.
It is great to be here again. You know, I had a beautiful drive up today. The blue bonnets are out. It's gorgeous outside. So very happy to be here once again. And you know, Ed, you have been very patient as we've been recording these podcasts. We do a math puzzler every week.
I love that part.
Oh, it's so much fun. We introduce it one week. We give the solution the next week. But I know you're kind of chomping at the bit. You're a numbers guy, and I know you'd love to dig deeper into some of those math puzzlers. So we're going to spend an entire episode talking about the nuance, the joy, the beauty, the meaning of numbers. Are you glad about that?
Oh, I'm thrilled. And I'll tell you, you know who else is going to be thrilled about this?
Who?
Actually, the Board of Trustees of Southwestern University, because they are huge fans of our podcast, of our show. And I will get emails, and they'll be sending me the answers, their solutions to the math puzzlers. So now they have to have about, you know, 12 minutes
right.
of context. They'll be working real hard. Oh, I'm delighted to talk about numbers. It's my favorite topic because I'm a number theorist. That's my area of scholarship.
Okay, so Mr. Number Theorist, I got to ask you something. Okay, deep question. What is a number?
This is the absolute hardest question you can ask anyone, especially a number theorist. In fact, when I teach Introduction to Number Theory, the very first thing I have them do on their little index cards when they put their name and their, you know, year and so forth, I say, finish the sentence. A number is blank. And the truth is that the concept of number is so abstract that it truly eludes definition. You can define pieces of it here and pieces of it there, but whatever one definition you give me, quite frankly, I can find a notion of number that will live outside of it.
So let's try to get at it this way then. Now, I know recently you spent some time with some young students. In Sweetwater, Texas.
In Sweetwater, they're using all my videos there.
They are, and they're particular fans of you and of math. And so I know you had a discussion with them, and I was thinking, you know, kindergarten, first graders, second graders, they're learning, you know, what does four mean? You know, you can point to four objects, but how do you teach at an early age? How do you first start teaching what a number is and what it means to count?
It was great. I had 200 kindergarten and first graders there. And when I asked them, do you love math? They all raised their hand and went crazy. Very interesting. We had talked about this earlier, that in fact, it takes a big curriculum to suck the joy of thinking about some of these ideas from them. But at this stage, they were still enthusiastic. Their notion of number, quite frankly, is the original notion of number for human beings, which is a way of comparing, a way of ordering. And so, you know, they all know three. They all know what that means. If they see objects, and in fact there are three of them, they know that. So it's basically, to them, number is how many. It's the answer to how many. And then there's also the notion of order, which is what is larger. So what comes after three? Four. They were able to do those things. The trickier questions that they had some issues with were questions of the sort, what number is two after three? And then they didn't know what two after meant. And the idea that order persists, they can kind of do it one at a time, like a la carte. But to take a quantum jump was an abstraction that was kind of right where they were. I mean, some of them got it and some of them were confused.
So at that age and stage of the game, what is their concept of sort of big picture? I mean, if you ask them, like, do they know infinity? Do they know big numbers and lots of zeros? Where are they in sort of trying to grasp that concept of numbers and meaning?
Again, you're actually bringing up a point that parallels all human beings, including people that are as pathetically old as I am. When you ask someone, you know, what do big numbers mean? And they knew of big numbers. They would say 10, and they would ask me questions. In fact, I was amazed that first graders even could articulate these kind of questions. Someone asked, what's 100 times 100? And I'm thinking to myself, they don't even know multiplication, but they must have heard this somewhere.
Uh-huh.
And they realized that somehow whatever multiplication means, whatever that operation means, it somehow is going to generate larger numbers. So they were very intrigued by what's 10 times 10. But one kid asked, what is 4 times 4, which is basically a harder question than 10 times 10. And I asked them, does anyone know? And one first grader said 16. It floored me. But in terms of the large concept, I didn't hear any of them talking about infinity. But the truth is, you know, what do large numbers mean? If you say a million to these folks, they probably heard that word, but they have no concept of what it means. But I would challenge you, Jennifer.
Me.
And, in fact, all of our adult listeners to say, do we really intuit large numbers? If I say even a million, or but what if I say a billion or definitely a trillion? I would argue that that has no real cognitive meaning to us that's intuitive.
Well, and I do want to get back to that point, but I have to follow up and ask you about something. So you said
four
times four is harder than 10 times 10. Why is that? Why is four times four a harder concept to grasp than 10 times 10? I would think smaller numbers would be easier.
Well, yes, and smaller numbers are easier. Maybe I meant that just for us in the sense that, I mean, you know, we understand that multiplying by 10 is basically just throwing on an extra zero.
Oh, got it, yeah.
But 4 times 4, you really have to understand what multiplication means, and then you have to kind of count up to get to 16.
Well, and we've talked about making meaning in learning, so that's a great example of how you've got to bring the meaning in to really understand what's going on.
In terms of meaning, they both are the same level of difficulty. It doesn't matter how large. I mean, for example, if you truly understand multiplication, then 1,475,000,000 times itself is just as easy, if you will, as 10 times 10.
So you were talking about understanding the really large numbers, a million, a billion, a trillion. Take something like a trillion. I don't know what the national debt is right now. But a lot of times—
It is increasing as we speak.
There are all those counters that are rolling up all the time. And— When we hear those really big numbers, it's often in the context of something else. So, and often that has a judgment or a meaning to it. So people will say our national debt is this big. Oh, that's bad. So we think, you know, $1 trillion of debt is bad. $1 trillion of, say, personal savings is good. Like there's often so much meaning mixed in with those big numbers. It kind of makes it hard to sort out what about just the number itself.
And the number itself, I think the bottom line is that it's very difficult for us to understand. So a lot of times when we're reading articles, especially about the national debt, what individuals will do, they will average that throughout the population of the United States, which is about 400 million. And that means that every man, woman, and child, you know, owes, and whatever it is, you know, $23,000. I'm just making that up. But at least it whittles it down to two smaller numbers, $24,000, which a lot of us can understand. And then the concept of about, you know, 400 million people, which quite frankly we don't understand, but at least we can imagine, every citizen or every person living in the United States. Okay, I can understand that at least abstractly, even though I can't make meaning of 400 million. The number 400 million, I would argue, I don't understand. I mean, I can write it down and I can manipulate it, but intuitively, I don't know what that means.
Well, and I think often with numbers, we can think about them in a meaningful way if we've seen them. You know, I've seen, you know, a football team with however many people are on that. I've seen a dozen eggs. I've seen that. I've experienced it. I haven't experienced directly, you know, trillions of dollars or 300 or 400 million people. I can't even picture it because I've literally never seen it.
By the way, there is no math puzzler this week. Is that correct?
Well, I think the whole discussion is kind of
but there's
math
no math
puzzler. Right.
So then I get to do a math plug.
A math plug. Okay.
Yes, because it's funny that you bring up this topic of talking about numbers. I'm actually going to be giving a talk on the Southwestern University campus. It's my very first general audience fun math talk that's open to everybody, so all of your listeners can come. And that's going to be on Monday, March 30th at 5 p.m. on campus in the Olin Building in room 105. And it's actually called Zero to Infinity, A History of Numbers. And so it's a lively talk, and it's you don't have to have a history background. You don't have to have a math background. It's open to everybody, and it'll be fun. Bring kids. Bring anyone you want. But what's interesting, one of the ways – I'll tell you how I start the talk, but don't tell anyone.
Okay, I won't.
Thank you.
It stops here.
Thank you. Sadly, I believe it might. But I talk about something that scientists have discovered a long time ago, which is called the limit of four. And it comes back to what you were just saying in a moment ago, that you know a dozen eggs and so forth. The truth is that with very small quantities, you can just look at, let's say, three eggs and then look at, you turn to the right and see four eggs. You can immediately know without counting one, two, three, one, two, three, four. You can immediately see where the sizes, who has a larger size. There's this innate sense that we can see sizes. But once they get a little bit too big, and by the way, you don't have to go to a million. You can literally go to like, you know, 10, 12. just visually looking at something, all of a sudden it's difficult to parse. And this is not a human thing. This
what?
Is a living thing. So there have been experiments done with finches, birds, and they will take two plates separated. And on one plate, there'll be, for example, three seeds. And on one plate, there'd be five seeds. And the finches will look, and they will always go, or most of them will always go to the five, because they can identify the more. But if you put on 16 seeds and 18 seeds, they can't differentiate that at all. It's this thing that's called the limit of four. And so when you're talking about the, you know, dozen, the truth is dozen's even too big.
We may need to do another episode on this because there's a lot to talk about here and we're close to the end of our time, but I've got to get in one more question. I'm wondering if the introduction of the, and here I'm going to date myself, the calculator, which I know no one uses anymore. Everyone uses it on their phone. But did that change how we experience numbers when, you know, I'm thinking back to an abacus and other ways that people used to count, when you didn't see counting as a personal experience, when you were doing it on a machine with just the digits, that must have changed a human's relationship with the concept of numbers.
It makes us once removed. It's kind of like a black box, whereas even with the abacus, there was a systematic way, there was meaning to what you were doing, and here it's a total black box. I should point out, though, calculators existed before the electronic calculator. Those were human beings. Do you realize that before the electronic calculators, a calculator was an individual who would do calculations, and that individual, he or she, was called a calculator. Interesting little fact.
I did not know that, and that's that's definitely another episode.
And then put this on the list. I want to tell you. So in my studies about the history of numbers, one of the really cool things I discovered was where the plus sign came from. That kind of cross.
Yeah.
And ask me about that on some
future
episode.
Oh, you're not going to tell us right now.
Do you want me to tell you really fast?
Yes.
Everything was written down in words. Everything. And so it wasn't like equations back in the time. And when they were talking about two quantities that they wanted to put together and they were writing in Latin, they would use the word et, which is E-T. And think about the word et written cursively. Now keep writing it really sloppy. You just kind of, the E goes away. You're just left with the T. And if you think of a cursive T, of course, kids don't use cursive anymore. But those of you who are over 30, imagine a cursive T. It evolved into the plus sign. How cool is that?
I knew my years of Latin would come into play sometime.
In math,
you have made my day. Dr. Ed Berger is president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas.
Will you mention our talk?
You did. I'll mention it again.
Yes.
It's Monday.
Monday, March 30th at 5 o'clock on the campus in Olin 105.
Ed, thank you so much for your discussion of the meaning, the nuance of numbers. There's a lot more there. We'll definitely touch on that again in a future episode of Higher Ed. Thank you for joining us. I'm Jennifer Staton with KUT 90.5.